with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink, and some say in a secret dungeon somewhere in the capital, his crown jewels are also on display. It's Mark Searby.
What? I mean, there was only one way I was ever going to take that as well. Listen, no, come on. Joking, no jokes on this weekend, please.
No? Okay.
Jubilee
okay.
Weekend.
Serious occasion.
Serious occasion. Well, no, fun to be had, but not rude like that, that you've just taken the tone down far too much.
It's unlike me.
Yeah, I know. It's unlike you.
Out of character. I'm sorry.
It's fine. But I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to disagree with what you said. That's the thing. It's just.
They are, you know, they're somewhere.
They're there. The ground jewels. You just have to say a secret word and you will get to see them, basically.
Yes. Amazing. As long as you pay the admission price.
Exactly. As long as you pay the admission price and you say the secret word, then yes, you can have a viewing of my own personal crown jewels. I don't know how we're getting away with this. I'll be honest. I really don't know.
No, not really.
Yes. Anyway. Look.
Have you ever seen the Crown Jewels?
Do you know I haven't? I haven't.
No,
have you?
Yes.
Oh.
Big occasion. It was great. Yeah. They're in a glass box, obviously.
Yeah, of course. But no.
Stop me from getting me sticky fingers on them, you know.
But, yeah, of course. Yeah. Mm. While you're eating an ice cream, just to put my hand on whatever else. Yeah. No, I've never seen them.
Sorry, Your Majesty?
Worth a trip then?
Yeah, definitely. Hmm. And I 100% always wanted to be a beef eater with all that get up on. That's a great outfit.
The problem is you've just been eating too many beef burgers. I'm a beef eater. Beef. No, it's not that type of beef.
What a job.
Yeah, what a job.
Free beef sandwiches every single day.
Every single day, just to keep in line with the title of your job, basically.
For queen and country.
Exactly. I will eat this beef and mustard sandwich because her mom demands it. Basically. Yes.
So, Mark, how are you on this grand occasion?
Yes, I'm very good, thanks. I'm very good. Obviously, you know, going to put the bunting out very soon and have some
street party time.
Street party's time. I think so. Absolutely. Yes.
Sandwiches, coronation chicken out.
Coronation chicken, indeed. And then a Victoria sponge, obviously, for afterwards, because they don't do an Elizabeth sponge, do they? So, you know.
Not yet.
No, exactly.
Someone's on it now, probably.
Probably, yeah. In which case,
it'll
that's
be
fine.
Invented by the end of the weekend.
That's fine. I love a Victoria sponge. So if it's going to be anything like that, I'm all for it. I really am. Yes, absolutely. But obviously, you know, Jubilee weekend. We're here to talk about films, and people go, "Well, there's nothing about with to tie in with that." Au contraire, there is.
Oh, there is.
There is. There is.
You've found something for us.
I have indeed. And, you know, the thing is, obviously, there are hundreds, thousands, if not millions of documentaries around the world about Queen Elizabeth II and the royal family. So what makes Elizabeth a portrait in parts different from the rest is probably the question that a lot of people are going to ask. You know, why are we reviewing this when we haven't reviewed loads of others? Good question. You know, it's, as the title suggests, Elizabeth, a portrait in parts, it is a documentary in parts. So it's split into small bite-sized chunks, but not of like, you know, not a standard timeline. You know, she was born, she was a teenager, she rode some horses, then she became queen, and then she did, you know, it's not that type of documentary. Okay. Instead, it's about certain things or words that revolve around her and her life. So there's a whole chapter, and bearing in mind as well, by the way, that these chapters last no longer than 10 minutes, if that. There's a whole chapter called Mom, which I'm like, that's good. So that's a chapter all about people calling her mom and what you've got to do and the etiquette with it and everything else like that. There's a chapter on her love of horse racing. There's a chapter about her silver jubilee. There are other chapters like this as well. But then the documentary doesn't just focus on that one subject within the chapter. So it's interspersed with footage from that time in Britain. There's a really good chapter about the late 70s, early 1980s, when the miners were on strike and the National Front were at the forefront of just about everything here in Britain. It alternates between that footage and the footage of the Queen dealing with her own problems. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, okay, now, is this documentary bearing the question of that, you know, when civil unrest happens in Great Britain, the Queen appears and tries to calm everybody down through, you know, appearances and speeches? Or is it saying that the Queen is so out of touch with the working class, you know, that here are the miners striking, the Queen is out here, you know, betting on horse racing or something else like that? And I think that's the great thing about this documentary, is that it can be interspersed, interpreted a number of different ways. And that's different. So I also like that the director, Robert Mitchell, who sadly is no longer with us, he passed away last year. He's the director behind Notting Hill and recently The Duke as well, which we reviewed, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this was his last film. He's kind of created this sort of buzzy MTV style documentary about someone who is very classic, very old timey. But then maybe I should say old timey as footage in this documentary shows she kind of hasn't lost her spark for a good joke or a bit of sarcasm. So there's a really good bit where she's walking in the gardens with Sir David Attenborough and they see the sundial in completely the wrong place to get the sunlight. And she mentions that to one of her people and they have a good chuckle about it. However, my favourite bit in the documentary is the Queen is watching horse racing and her bets come in, basically. And she's given her winnings and she says to the person, "How much have I won?" And the reply is £16, ma'am. To which she looks at the camera, gives a cheeky smile and then puts the money in her pocket. I genuinely, it was like a scene out of The Office or something like that, you know, a mockumentary. It was, I really laughed at that. I thought that was really funny, I've got to say.
Excellent.
It's really good. There's a few cheeky bits like that in there I liked. The documentary also includes some new and old interviews with famous British people, such as Sir Paul McCartney, Sir Lenny Henry, Robbie Williams, a few others as well. They've all got a story to tell, obviously, because they've met the Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Some aren't as straight-laced as you would expect. They're humorous. The Robbie Williams one, especially, is quite humorous. But the documentary isn't filled with them. That's the good thing about it. They're sort of scattered throughout a little bit.
Yeah.
So the thing is, as well, is I'm sure people go, well, it's just a, you know, it's just another love-in for the Queen type documentary. Actually, that's wrong here, because this documentary focuses on some of the less than positive times that the Queen has been through as well. So obviously the marriages of her sons and the subsequent breakdown of said marriages, that's focused on. The fire at Windsor Castle is focused on. The radio silence when Diana died is heavily focused on as well. I thought that's an interesting way to make a documentary, is to go, do you know what? She's not infallible, contrary to what a lot of documentaries will have you think. Actually,
yeah,
there is this side of her where she gets things wrong and, you know, the monarchy get it wrong and they need to be at times told, look, you need to change these ways. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I appreciated that, you know, Robert Mitchell had put that in there. I thought that was really interesting. So as I said, not a usual type of documentary, a very unusual documentary in its styling. Yet I found this quite interesting because it was so unusual. You know, it was very different to the boring Billion and One documentaries we've already got about the Queen. So, I mean, this documentary puts a lot into its short runtime. I mean, it's only 89 minutes and there's a lot of different things going on here. So it's very quick. As I said, it's very MTV style. You know, hey, it's 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there.
Yeah, moving through the history quite fast.
Yeah, well, it is. It's moving through the history.
Jumping around all over the place.
That's the thing. It does jump around quite a bit. So rather than you going, okay, it's in a, you know, standard time linear fashion, it's not. It's jumping all over the place. I kind of like that about it. It sort of kept you on your toes a little bit. So I thought this was a good documentary, actually. You know, it's something different. And I think that's why it stands out more than you know, everything. All the other documentaries that obviously are on TV this weekend and beyond as well. So, yeah, I thought this was, I won't say a standout. I don't think standout is right. But in terms of documentaries about Queens, about Queen Elizabeth II, this is a standout.
So you reckon this, from the trailer, I mean, it's only a short trailer, but I feel like you did get a little bit of personality behind, and nice to see some sort of really, really old footage, but not the stuff that you've seen before on the telly.
Do you know what? You're absolutely right. It's nice to see some old footage and footage that we haven't seen before as well. There's a lot of footage in there with her mother as well, obviously the Queen Mum, which I'd not seen. You know, there was some nice bits in there. There was some bits behind the scenes where she was having her portrait painted. There was bits where she was getting ready to go on some sort of, I don't know what it was, to be honest with you, but there was all behind the scenes footage, which, you know, if this had been an official documentary, it wouldn't have been included, but it is included here because it's slightly, you know, it's sort of left of center. It's slightly kooky as well, where they're like, no, we won't have this. Instead, it's good. I liked it. I liked this documentary. I thought it was good.
Nice. So Elizabeth, A Portrait in Parts. Where is it available?
So it's in cinemas and also streaming now on Prime Video as well. So if you don't want to go to the cinema and you've got Prime Video, you can see it there as well. So, you know, it's available most places.
Best enjoyed with
tea and scones.
Coronation chicken sandwiches.
Coronation chicken sandwiches. Tea and scones as well.
Tea and scones.
Yes.
But agree before you start watching it, whether you're putting jam on or cream on first.
Don't start that. Listen, we're not doing that.
You get distracted.
We're not doing that. We're not going to start with that. No, no. Definitely not.
So now something quite similar. What's next?
It's for something completely different, and it's not even Monty Python. It is so far away from Elizabeth Portrait in Parts. We're now talking about a horror movie called Dash Cam. This is about Annie Hardy, who is a musician and vlogger with a large online following. She leaves LA for London and the hospitality of a former bandmate during the pandemic. Little does she realise that picking up a stranger will see her fighting for survival against a supernatural force.
Oh my God.
Yes. So
this looks terrifying.
It's definitely not for you, is it? I know you're not horror. No. So this is written and directed by Rob Savage. Now, he's the guy who gave us that smash hit horror film Host, which came out 2 years ago. You know, it was all shot over Zoom.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. So that's...
And we recorded our review of it on Zoom.
We did. You know, very meta of ourselves there. we should have recorded this over a dash cam, to be honest, but never mind. We're behind the times here. So now Rob Savage has made a film that takes the always online streaming idea and puts it into the wider world. So it's sort of like a modern day Blair Witch Project using dash cams, basically. I mentioned Blair Witch Project because obviously it is kind of a found footage movie. Dash cam is nowhere near as good or as influential as the Blair Witch Project. In fact, dash cam is utter rubbish.
Oh, fair enough.
So so it's all shot through the lens of Annie's...
Didn't do it for you?
No, it didn't. And I'll tell you why. So it's all shot through the lens of Annie's phone because she streams it to the world. So obviously, you know, I know it says dash cam, but she puts a mobile phone on the dash
cam. Phone cam.
So the thing is, obviously, it's not a dash cam when she's on the plane or when she's in the house or whatever else. It's only when she's in the car, you see. The first thing I think to note about this is how annoying Annie Hardy is as a character. I mean, on every level, she comes across as aggressive, like needlessly aggressive as well. She spits out offensive dialogue to anyone and everyone. I mean, once or twice at the start, it may be funny, but throughout the whole film, it's nails down the chalkboard bad, and it's really without merit. You know that thing of just because we can swear does mean we will swear, and you're like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. But that's all this film is. We can swear. We can get away with it. Yes, it's going to be an 18.
It's pretty annoying, pretty fast.
It does. It, absolutely. And also, Annie's over-the-top aggressiveness changes into her rapping, which is just hideous. Absolutely. She raps to the camera. Honestly, it's one of the worst lead characters I've ever seen in a film. I was praying she was bumped off very early on and it would change to one of the people that she, you know, went to London to live with. I really do. The other thing is,
The other thing, what you want for your protagonist, is it?
It's not. It's absolutely not. No, you're right. It's absolutely not. The other thing with this movie is you can't see anything. It is all shot via the phone.
It looks dark.
Exactly. I mean, you've seen the trailer. It's dark, but the Blair Witch Project was dark. But, you know, even with the Blair Witch Project, when there was nothing there, you were still seeing some bits or whatever it was. It's all shot via a phone in somebody's hand or on their hat or on the dashboard or whatever it is. It's just a series of blurred shots of people running away. I mean, loads of people back in the day criticised the Blair Witch Project for this, you know, and yet all of a sudden, it's amazing when it's done in dashcam. No, it's not. Seriously, it's just, it's unwatchable. Almost.
It's not a good advert for the new cameras and smartphones, is it?
No, exactly. It's almost unwatchable. You're watching colours and shadows bounce around the screen. There's no scary moments or shocking jump scares. There's just sort of shapes on screen that you're trying to work out what it is and where Annie is and if something's coming out of the shadows. But you can't see a thing. And as I said, you know, people complained about the Blair Witch doing that, and yet here's Dashcam doing exactly the same thing, but 10 times worse. You literally can't see anything. I was watching the screen going, what am I looking at? I can't see anything, and all I can hear is somebody swearing. I just...
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, this... I mean, this is 77 minutes long, okay? And it felt twice as long. It's just... Oh, no. You've just got this terrible central character, some of the worst camera work I've ever seen, and there's nothing scary about this movie at all. There is nothing scary about it at all. You know, I know you hate your horror movies. I know you do, but you would watch this and you would turn around and go, I wasn't scared because I couldn't see anything. I was only scared of the screaming central character because it was...
Scared of the bad language.
Exactly. Scared of the bad language. Honestly... Honestly, Stuart, worst film I've seen this year. Worst film I've seen. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I can't. I'm trying to think of a worst film I've seen recently. I'm trying to think of a worst film I saw last year as well. I saw this film last year, by the way. And
it's just stayed with you. It was that bad.
Well, unfortunately, yes. And, you know, you were saying the other week we should do something about, you know, films that, like your worst films ever. And I said, no, I don't want to talk about worst films ever because it continues to shine a spotlight on how bad they are. Dashcam would be in there. One of the worst films. It really is. Past, certainly this year, if I think about it really hard as well, probably last year as well. Honestly, the worst film I've seen. Really terrible. And
that's, in some ways, that's quite impressive.
Yeah, that's, I guess so.
To be that bad.
I guess so, you know. But you look elsewhere, you know, and listen, it's just my opinion, okay? Just my opinion. It's just my informed opinion. There are reviews everywhere else, well, other places, that have given it 4 stars, have given it 5 stars. So you see...
Someone's given it 8 on here. I mean, that's...
There we go. There you go.
One in a minority, I would say. But,
but yes, so, you know, I think this film is very... is splitting people right down the middle. You either love it or you hate it. Oh. I absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated it. And we've spoken about it now for... Well, we've been talking about it now for about 5 or 6 minutes. I really don't want to talk about this film anymore, to be honest.
That's it. He's done.
I'm done.
He's going to leave the studio.
I just... It's just... As I said, there's no more I can say about it apart from it is the worst film I've seen this year so far.
So... We all know what to get you for your birthday. That's good. Great.
We will never be friends. We will never be friends again.
A dash cam escape experience.
No.
In an Uber.
That's fine. Got no problem with that. It's watching this film again. I couldn't stomach watching it again. I just couldn't. You know, I mean, as I said, 77 minutes. Most people go, why didn't you leave? Well, it's 77 minutes. You think I might as well get my money's worth because it's only just over an hour and that's fine. You know, but when that credit rolled, unfortunately,
God, it felt like a drag.
When the credits do roll, the film continues, the credits roll over the film. I mean, I left soon as those credits finished. I was like, right, out. And that was it. Done.
Run.
Yeah. So there we go. Let's never speak.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So what else you got for us, Mark?
Okay, so once again, something very different. I've got a film called Bergman Island. This is about a couple who retreat to the island that inspired Ingmar Bergman to write screenplays. There they hope to find inspiration for their upcoming films, but the lines between reality and fiction start to blur. So, I guess, you know, I've seen several of Ingmar Bergman's films through the years. And I do agree with what a lot of people have seen. He really was a pioneer when it came to movie making and cinema in general. You know, he's revered throughout the film world. So a film about his influence doesn't surprise me. While this film is obviously about the two film writers trying to get inspiration from, you know, Bergman's spirit and his own locations, I think the film is also like a meditation on what unblocks and blocks writers. Basically, you know, how do you deal with writer's block? So Tony, who is, I guess he's the main character in it, Tony, doesn't seem to have too much of an issue getting his screenplay written, whereas his partner, Chris, is really struggling. And it seems like the ghost of Ingmar Bergman is looming very large on her. So she decides to take off around the island to seek out her own inspiration. There's some really interesting moments here, but I think the film is too busy doing little nods or jokes or tidbits about Bergman. So if you've never seen any Ingmar Bergman films, or if you've, like me, you've seen a few, but you're not an aficionado of them, then you're possibly going to feel a bit like an outsider when Bergman is heavily discussed, or when they go, this is the house where they shot so-and-so. And whatever else, which I wasn't a fan of, because it felt like the film is for Bergman fanboys only when it did that. You know, like it's not open to everybody.
Exclusive.
Yeah. And, you know, my issue, I mean, this is a wider question as well that we could discuss forever. But, you know, the fact that, oh, this is only for, you know, we've made it for fans, only for fans, which is a statement I absolutely detest anyway.
Yeah.
And
get,
you know,
more fans by opening it up a
little. Exactly. That's the thing. So, you know, without going into greater detail about that, it did feel a little bit like that. You know, I think that was the annoying thing about it. However, the film does this strange flip where Chris starts to begin to tell her story idea to Tony. And at that moment, the film then flips to Chris's actual story being played out in the film. So it's a film within a film.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I was a bit confused by the trailer because I thought, hang on, what's happened here?
You see, I hadn't seen the trailer when I saw this. So I was kind of like, okay, right, that's fine. So this story, the story of the two lovers attending the wedding, which is the story within the story, I found really interesting and was very much won over by the two central characters. They're both very lightweight characters, yet I think that's the perfect way they should be in this sort of kind of like delicate story of love and lust, I guess. That's the part of the film I really enjoyed. I like that about it. Then the film does this strange flip again in its finale. And as I said, earlier on, it starts to blur the lines between what is real, what is happening between Chris and Tony, and what is happening between the two at the wedding. And, you know, is it coming together? And it feels like the work of somebody who wants to show how Bergman-like they can be in making a film like this. As such, I thought it came across as a little bit misguided in trying to do that blend at the end. I've got to be honest. You know, I mean, what's that saying? No man is an island? Or so, it's something like that, isn't it? You probably know this.
Something like that,
yeah. Well, I mean, it seems that Bergman has become an island, And I have to say, you know, if you, you know, if you have to stay there, then I'd probably just go for a weekend because it looks like anything longer and I'd be super bored based on this film.
It could be a bit boring.
It could be. And I think that's my point about the film is that it is, it's a little bit drab when it's pontificating and revering Bergman. Oh, isn't he fantastic? Let's put him up on a pedestal and he's absolutely brilliant and everything about this film is, you know, influenced by Ingmar Bergman. Great, okay, fine. You know, I mean, let's be honest, most films nowadays are influenced by Bergman, Hitchcock, Truffaut, you know, Chaplin. And like, there's a handful of people who everybody's just copying now, to be honest. So I get that. And, you know, that's fine. I think when the film is letting the story within the story play out, it's really nice. I really like that about it. So I was interested. There was just some bits where it lost me for you know, for Bergman reasons, I guess. So I think
got a bit,
it got a, it got, you know, for want of a better word, when you're describing Ingmar Bergman, it got a little bit nerdy. Okay.
Nerdy. Yes. Nerdy Island.
Yes. Nerdy Bergman Island, I guess. Which, as I said, if you are a huge fan of Ingmar Bergman, you will really like this film, I think. If you're just sort of, oh, I've seen a couple of films, you know, whatever. There's some bits in here that are fine. You know, I think there are some bits. But, yeah, I'm rocking between both sides of it was good or it was bad. That's the thing. So, you know, bits and bobs.
Shades of both. So did it make you want to visit Bergman Island? It looks like quite
a
nice place.
It did look, I have to say, when Chris is cycling round it all, I was like, this looks like a lovely place. It really does. But then she bumps into a lot of Bergman tours around the island. And I'm like, I don't want to bump into those people.
Oh, that would get you.
Yeah, they look a bit obnoxious. I've got to be honest. But the island itself looked really nice. Yeah, it looked really nice. Yes, as a promotional piece for the holiday, it sold it to me. I've got to be honest, you know.
Yeah. Tourist board will be happy.
Yeah, tourist board will be happy. It's very true. Thanks. Yes, yes.
So where's this out? Is this DVD?
So this is in cinemas right now. Yes, it's in cinemas. Yes, and as I said, you know, it's worth seeing on the big screen because of the cinematography, because the island does look very nice.
Nice. So what else you got for us next week, Mark?
Next week, we're returning to Jurassic Park.
Well, oh my God.
Well, sort of. Jurassic World, obviously, as the new franchise is called. So
dinosaurs are coming
to us. So yes, the final part in the new trilogy, Jurassic World Dominion, we'll be talking about. We'll also
God, I'm so excited.
I thought you might be, because you'd asked me about it the other week as well. I thought somebody was excited about this. We'll also be talking about a movie about a hairdresser starring Udo Kier. It's called Swan Song. Picked up a few rave reviews out of the festivals last year. It's finally getting a UK release here. And we will also be talking about, on DVD and Blu-ray, Licorice Pizza. It has been 6 months since this film was released in cinemas. I think maybe people have forgotten about it. So we're going to be talking about it again because it's now on DVD and Blu-ray. So we'll be talking about Licorice Pizza, which conjures up lots of weird ideas, I guess.
It does, yeah. Like Bertie Bassett's on a sort of...
on a margarita or something.
Yeah, it just feels weird.
Yeah. And a Hawaiian pizza with Roundtree's fruit gums on it or something. I don't know. I mean, what's
like it?
Yeah.
Jelly worms.
Jelly worms.
It's strange.
Jelly worms on a meat feast.
I mean, it's not going to be that bad. I think we should try it. Yeah.
Are you saying you're going to cook up a licorice pizza for us to try?
100%.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I don't know if you cook it up there, do you?
I don't know. This is the thing. I've no idea. I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe that's one to explore next week. So, next week, another eclectic mix, really.
Life will find a way.
It will. It will.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this little podcast for years now. Mark has watched and expertly reviewed hundreds of films and I've made hundreds of terrible jokes. They're all available to listen to again if you subscribe to the Film Reviews and Movie News podcast. It's freely available wherever you get your podcasts from, or you can find all the latest episodes and everything else I do online at stuartpink.com.